Why don't you just present it again?
Mayor, come to order. We do have a quorum. And I'm wondering, Representative Benson, if you had a chance to look over our minutes before you answer now. would love a motion to
I would take very careful check of this. I have, Mr. Chairman, and I move the minutes.
Thank you. Representative Benson moves the minutes of our last meeting. Any discussion? All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Members, today we have three bills before us. House File 365, 396, and 169. These are bills that the author's intentions are to have heard in other committees besides ourselves. Two are primarily financial, fiscal in nature. The other is more policy in nature. However, they are here for us to be able to vet through some of the policy issues, some of the more important policy issues of these bills. And so I look forward, I look forward to our discussion on these bills and your questions. And hopefully we'll be able to move these bills on according to the author's wishes. The first bill we have today is House File 365, Representative Morgan. You can come forward and identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative Will Morgan, and I'm here to present House File 365.
Good morning, Representative. Good to have you here. The Chair will move House File 365, and I believe our motion is to recommend it to pass and be re-referred to the K-12 Finance Committee. Is that your desire, Representative Morgan?
That is correct, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Wonderful. Representative Morgan, then we have the bill before us. If you can proceed and perhaps introduce your testifier as well.
I will. Thank you. I have with me the Superintendent of Intermediate School District 916, Connie Hayes. I'm going to ask her to provide a little background for the committee on the intermediate school districts and on the specifics of this bill as it relates to their participation in this program. As many of you know, in 2005, the legislature and the governor passed the Alternative Teacher Professional Pay System, so-called QCOMP. I prefer to call it ProPay. But this bill is going to make it easier for the intermediate school districts to participate in this plan. And I would like to have Superintendent Hayes give a little background as to why that would be the case.
Welcome, Superintendent Hayes, to our committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Connie Hayes, Superintendent of Intermediate School District 916. Thank you very much for the opportunity today to tell you about our needs at the intermediate schools. A little bit of background about the intermediate school districts. Legislature approved the formation of three intermediate school districts in the metro area here back in the 1970s for the purposes of cooperative vocational education for the member school districts. Since that time, each of us have added some additional services for our member school districts. Think of us as districts that serve special populations within our member school districts. We have some of the most severely disabled and challenged handicapped students from our member school districts that are served in our programs. In addition to that, as was the basis of the formation of the intermediates, we all have very strong career and technical programs for students that attend a couple of hours a day from their member school districts. So think, as I said, of special populations in the metro area. And therein lies part of our challenge in participating in the alternative pay system that the legislature has established. All of the student numbers, the ADMs, if you will, for our students that we serve are counted in their member districts. If you remember the language in the alternative pay statute, it's calculated based on the number of students that are counted in your district. Since our students that we served are counted back in their home districts, we don't have access to counting students to generate the revenue. Our suggestion for an alteration in the statute would be to generate revenue based on the number of teachers that are serving the students that we provide service to from our member school districts. And that, I'll open it up for any questions.
Thank you, Superintendent Hayes.
Mr. Chair, if I might just give a little more background on this. To give you an example, when the Independent School District 191, where I helped write our alternative pay plan last year, when we when our plan was approved by the Minnesota Department of Education, we were given on a per pupil basis of $260 to meet the design and implement the goals of our plan. That added up to about $2.7 million for our school district for this plan. When you divide that by about 700 FTE of teachers, that adds up to about $3,800 per teacher. And I think there you can see where that number then comes from. I think if you went around to most school districts who've been implemented plans like this, that's where that $3,800 number comes from. So with that, I'd be happy to answer questions as well.
Representative Morgan, excuse me, and Commissioner Hayes, can you tell us a little bit why, from your perspective, why it's important for your district to participate in the QCOP or ProPay system? What would be the advantages to your people?
Well, if you look at the goals of the language for the alternative pay system, it's twofold. One is to increase the knowledge and skills of the teachers that serve the students in that particular district. The second goal is to attract and retain highly qualified staff. And in both of those measures, we have great needs to continue the professional development of our students. We're seeing more and more challenging students come to our programs because they are arriving at your home school district. And secondly, attracting and retaining highly qualified teachers is of a particular challenge for many of our programs that serve the most severely disabled students. So both of those goals, creating some incentives for our staff to really move along in both of those areas, would be a great advantage to providing high-quality services for our students.
Thank you, Superintendent. We do have a question from Representative Erickson. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. And to the testifiers, either to Representative Morgan or the other testifier, who negotiates the contracts for this intermediate school district?
Superintendent Hayes.
Thank you very much. We negotiate our contracts just as any typical K-12 school district is negotiated between the Board of Education and the teachers that are part of our bargaining unit. So it differs not at all from a typical K-12 district.
And a question.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. I'm just wondering why we're hearing this in policy rather than having it directly go to finance, because all my questions are really finance-related.
Representative Erickson, I had the same question when the bill was referred to us by the powers that be, and they just sent it here, and they reassured us that it was the proper place, and I said, fine, we will do due diligence, and the members will learn a little bit about QCOP and in the course, and hopefully we will move the bill forward, where I think there will be much deeper discussion around some of the fiscal implications of this proposal.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Representative High Gergen.
Thank you. You did very well. Thank you, Chair Mariani. Your attempt at QCOM, my understanding is, and when I look at the size of the school district, how many students are there? How many students do you have all together?
Superintendent Hayes.
Yes, thank you. Well, each of our school districts of the three intermediates differ in size. Telling you the number of students, I'm not sure if I could take that off the top of my head because it varies. But we hire about 600 employees, and about one-half to two-thirds of those are participants in our teachers' bargaining unit. As you might expect, because we serve special populations, many of our classrooms have a low student-to-teacher ratio because of the needs of the students. So kind of dividing that out by a typical classroom size isn't going to help you out much. At our Career and Tech Center, we typically serve on an annual basis about 900 students that pass through there during three periods of the day. at our one of our EBD programs at CapitalView. We have about 90 students that pass through that program on an annual basis. So it really varies from program to program across the district, which would be true in all three of the intermediates. Some programs could be as small as five students in a program.
Representative Hager.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, again, some of the problems that we have with QCOMP with some of the small rural school districts, it doesn't work as well as it does with the very large districts. And I'm wondering, Superintendent Hayes, here, being that you're in so many different areas, that do you actually, outside the scene, I can see where you're coming from as far as the money aspect. Everybody wants to get their hands in that pot of money. But do you see it as that beneficial for your program, for your school?
Superintendent Hayes put her hands in the pot.
Yes, to a certain extent. Okay. Although I have to say I'm not a stranger to the alternative pay concept. I was a superintendent down in southeastern Minnesota, La Crescent-Holka, one of the first five school districts that entered into the alternative pay system from the original bill. And as a small rural district of about 1,700 kids, we did face some challenges that were unique and different than a metro area school district might face. However, both myself and the teachers union faced that as a hurdle to get over, not a brick wall. And I think for most of the aspects of this new bill on the alternative teacher pay, we I think have some flexibility that we can accomplish the same goals.
Representative Heigerken? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. Superintendent, in what way do you see the plan that you would submit if your intermediate district decided to apply for alternative pay? In what way do you see that plan being different from a regular school district that does not serve so many special needs students?
Mm-hmm. Superintendent Hayes.
Thank you. I think we might face some unique challenges that are different than a typical K-12 district, having gone through some of this in my recent history. The piece that I think will be fairly easy for us to accomplish is the portion that includes the teacher evaluation system. At Intermediate 916, for the past 4 years, we've been working on implementing an evaluation system that's consistent with the Charlotte Danielson model across all of our teachers, and of course that includes mostly special education staff. So that element of the language will be fairly easy for us to implement. Probably the bigger challenge, and we think we can work on that as well, as the student achievement piece. You might expect that some of the most severely handicapped students aren't tested in a typical sense that K-12 students are. But we expect to work with the Department of Education and find a way to either fit into the current language or perhaps consider some specific aspects that would fit for the intermediate districts in the future.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
We have a question for Representative Dietrich. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not very familiar with the intermediate school district, so please forgive me if my line of reasoning is not correct. So your students come from, did you say, three different school districts?
Superintendent Hayes.
Yes. There are actually three intermediate school districts in the metropolitan area. Our particular intermediate, which is 916, serves 11 member school districts surrounding the White Bear Lake area. And then the two other intermediates serve school districts surrounding them.
Okay. Do you know of those 11? Do you know of those 11 school districts, how many of those school districts are involved in QCOMP?
Mm-hmm. Superintendent Hayes.
Thank you. I don't know off the top of my head the number, but there are several that have implemented.
And your students that come from those 11 school districts, but they are counted at their home school district in the funding formula.
That is correct.
Superintendent Hayes.
another question. And so,
Representative
QComp, when it was designed, if I remember correctly, is that a per pupil? That is funded per pupil, correct? It doesn't go per teacher.
Superintendent Hayes.
That is correct. It is per pupil.
Okay. So,
Representative Dietrich.
In essence, if a student is actually a part of two different school districts in a way, correct?
Superintendent Hayes.
For some of the students, that would be correct. For some of them, that would not be correct. The students that attend our career and tech programs leave their home district for approximately 2 hours a day to come over and take career and tech classes and then return back to their home district. The students that are in our special education programs are in our school district predominantly the entire day. In terms of the finance piece, though, of counting the student for the basic formula, that finance piece is counted for all of them in their home district.
And so, therefore, Superintendent Hayes, the ability for the intermediate districts to be able to have this resource for the purposes of the QCOP legislation is pretty slim. I understand you may have some per pupil, but it's pretty small. Representative Dietrich?
Yeah, I just would like to make one last comment, and that I think the QComp proposal, the way with the two goals that you have outlined, would be very critical to the type of services you're delivering. I do have some questions. It does raise some questions about QComp and the whole funding of QComp, but I could definitely see the need in a school district design like yours is.
Representative Brown has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question has two parts, and maybe it's that I don't understand the bill as yet. My first part of my question is this legislation, would this be limited to the three schools that I see on the memo? And, or is it going to be applied to the whole state, schools that would qualify within the whole state? And if it is, what is our definition that we're working with of an intermediate school that would qualify for this?
Representative Morgan?
Well, I think I'll try and let Superintendent Hayes take the first stab at that.
Superintendent.
Thank you. At this point, we are speaking only of the three intermediate school districts. They are defined in statute as intermediate districts, and there are only three of them in the state of Minnesota. So as the language currently exists, be for the three districts.
Representative Brown. Yep. Representative Swales.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would like to piggyback on Representative Dietrich's questions because for me, that's where the confusion is. I, as a teacher at one of the schools that sends students to 916, I frequently have students arriving late because the classes or the traffic was bad getting from White Bear there to my school. But this is where I'm confused. You said that the special education dollars for the students who are enrolled at 916, the entire amount goes to 916, even though, okay, this is where, is the funding for your school partially paid by the school districts that you serve, or if, when the students spend 2 hours at 916 and then are transported to my school, then what is the payment from my school for those students who are also served? I'm sorry.
Okay. Superintendent Hayes.
You're not alone in being confused. This is a story we tell quite often. When you think of the intermediate school districts, think of us more as a service agency. Our revenue flows to us from our member school districts and other school districts that aren't members that do send students to us through a process of fees and tuition. So since that student is counted in the member district, all of the aid and tax levies that is due to a district because of that student first stops at the member school district. And then when that member school district sends us Johnny Smith to one of our programs, we send an invoice to that home district for tuition and fees for providing that service.
Follow-up, please.
Representative Swales.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When the student then would come to your school, would the QComp dollars for that student be counted from the home district? Already the QComp dollars are going to that district, and now you're asking for a second set of QComp dollars. Who would pay those? I mean, you're asking from the state, but...
Representative Morgan.
Representative Swales, we're not asking to expand the pot of money that is allocated for alternative teacher professional pay system. That is a set pot of money. The governor has recommended an increase in that budget. Different committees here will be talking about that and what we're going to do with that. This bill would not require an increase in that at all. What it would do, it would make it possible, practically possible, for intermediate school districts to participate in that system at a level of the cost that we see experienced by other districts that have chosen to participate in that system. And that's where the $3,800 per FTE comes from. So this is all coming out of the same pot of money from the state. It's not like there's money. If a student is coming from a school district that has an adopted APPPS plan, if a student is coming from that district will still receive whatever money they were guaranteed to receive under the law, under that plan. It's just that if that student is also going to an intermediate school district, this bill would provide a mechanism for that intermediate school district to participate at the same level as the school district that student also attends. So we're not shifting money from one school district that already gets it to another. We're just making it possible for the intermediate districts to have access to participate in this plan at the same level any other school district.
Members, let's remember that the students are being served by two districts.
Exactly.
And so it begs the question in terms of the kind of teacher enhancement, student achievement goals that we want to see in both realities for those students and the resources necessary in the respective districts to be able to achieve those goals. Representative Welty. Members, we have about five members who have questions. It is my intent to take a vote on this bill. We do have two other bills before us that would like very much for us to get through this today. So please keep your questions short.
Thank you, Chairman Mariani. Just a question for either of you. How did you arrive at the number that you have in the bill? I'm just wondering how we get to, I think it's $3,800.
Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Welty. As I've mentioned, I think it's a best approximation of the amount of money per FTE that goes into a school district approved with an approved plan that is funded normally under the per pupil cost. Currently, it's $260 per pupil, $190 in state aid, $70 in levy authority that goes into the school districts to pay for to support this plan. If you take that times the number of pupils, divide it by the student-teacher ratio in that particular school district, you get about $3,800. Some places a little more, probably some places a little less, depending on what their staffing is and how they are, whether they're a growing district or a declining enrollment district. The $3,800 is more or less, and as I said, in my school district, when we do this, when we get the money and divide it out by the FTE, we think it's just over $3,800. But that's how we arrived at that number, I believe.
Members, my hope is that we'll be able to vet much more fully the finance questions in K-12 finance, assuming the bill successfully moves there. But my intent, any question is obviously a fair game in any committee, but my intent here would be to have us focus primarily on the policy issues related to this provision. Representative Greiley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Morgan, would you be open between now and the Finance Committee to amending your bill to reflect the concerns that I've heard from Representative Dietrich and Representative Swales about the same student generating Q comp for two different districts, to changing it so that the formula for intermediates would be, you know, they would get the full amount for students that they have the full amount of time, but if there are students shared between districts, then it would be prorated based on the amount of time the student is in whichever district.
Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dreiling, I would definitely be willing to take a look at that. The one concern, and this was something that we really struggled with in District 191 when we were developing our plan, there are fixed costs of implementing a system like this, particularly with the evaluation procedures necessary and so forth. So I would certainly be willing to look at that, but I think we really need to make sure that we make it possible for these intermediate school districts to participate fully. And that's what this bill does intend to do. But I think we have to look at those concerns and see if we can help relieve some members' concerns.
Members, I'm going to ask, there are still members with questions, and I do want to honor that, but I want to ask, in particular, the department is here, if they wish to comment on this bill, and if there's anyone else that wishes to offer testimony on this bill, if they can come forward, I'd appreciate it. If I don't see anyone moving, it sounds like no one wants to do that. Is anyone from the department here that would wish to comment on this bill? I guess the department doesn't wish to comment. All right, members, Representative Gutwall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On a policy point, if I may, Senator Morgan, we've got a cap, so if we approve this, we're going to end up taking away from programs that are already doing QCOMP. If the pie doesn't get any bigger, and the policy issue here is, are we going to erode some of the existing QCOMP programs in favor of this expansion?
Representative Morgan. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gottwald. As I understand it, currently we have not reached the cap. There still is money available under the cap. In the governor's budget, he has proposed expanding that cap to make sure that as more and more districts line up to develop plans and submit letters of intent to MDE, that they would be able to move forward with those plans. This bill would just help the intermediate school districts be participants in those plans, just like any other district who might want to support their teachers and their students.
It's interesting, Representative Gutwald and Representative Heigerk, and I think would recall this and some of the others, that when the governor first rolled out this idea, there was incredible skepticism on the part of a lot of districts and a lot of legislators, and now it seems, Representative Erickson, like we're moving to a stage where everyone wants in on the QCOMP. So it's interesting how policy develops here. Representative Detmer.
Mr. Chair, my questions were answered. Thank you.
Representative Slocum.
I just wanted to restate, because I think there's some confusion out here among some of us teachers. When they're talking about the intermediate districts, if you look at the list at the very bottom of your page, that lists the districts. Sorry about that. That lists the districts. There's a huge number of schools that are served by these intermediate districts. These intermediate districts exist to save money for these school districts. It's a cost-effective way to save money for every one of these school districts to deliver mandated services to these students. Sorry about that.
Members, in the spirit of bipartisanship, we're sharing our notes with one another so that we all have a look at what those districts are.
Anyway, I have very firsthand knowledge of these intermediate school districts. My daughter works for Capital View, and she serves level 5 behavior kids that school districts don't have the economic wherewithal to serve. That they can't fully participate in QCOMP is not a good thing. And I think we need to realize that these districts are saving these school districts a lot of money by delivering the services that they are.
Thank you.
I should be on the other side of the table.
Yeah. You're doing fine, Representative Swales. Final question for Representative Erickson, then we'll move on to a vote.
Thank you, Slocum.
Representative Slocum.
Oh,
you,
you all right, I'll share detailed information. Whatever. Thank you, Chair Mariani. And I just wanted Dr. Melcher to answer a policy question.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Melcher?
Dr. Melcher, you're being called upon. Please come forward. The third time is always a charm. So. Yeah. Welcome to the committee, Dr. Melcher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chair Mariani.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you. Dr. Melcher, when we created the alternative pay legislation and included intermediate school in the original language, what was the thinking of the governor at that time in including intermediate in the regular alternative pay formula?
Dr. Melcher, if you can identify yourself also.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Erickson, Tom Melcher, I'm the Director of Finance at the Department of Education. I think at the time that the governor recommended that intermediate school districts be included, I think the thinking was that they would just be included in the funding mechanism on the same basis as other school districts are throughout the state. I think there is some rationale for the proposal in front of you in the sense that the intermediate school districts do serve a high proportion of students that are not counted as students at the intermediate district. The students are counted only in one place, and that's the home school that they're in. And so the analysis that we've done since that time would suggest that the amount of funding per teacher available at the intermediates is quite a bit less than the amount of funding per teacher available at the other sites. But this is not something that's in the governor's recommendations.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. So, Dr. Melcher, there'd have to be like a billing system like there is already if they were to be a part of the plan as called for in law right now, correct?
Dr. Melcher.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Erickson, I believe the way the current law reads is that we would make the payment specifically for the QComp aid directly to the intermediate school districts. Normally, we pay only school districts directly, and so, for example, the special education aid that an intermediate district would generate is allocated back to the member districts, and the member districts pay tuition to the intermediate. But I believe the law for QComp or for the alternative professional pay system was based on a direct payment, which is something we can do.
Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Melcher and Representative Erickson, members, again, this has been terrific vetting. Just shows why our committee is the best committee. and we certainly, assuming the bill moves forward, I hope it does, we certainly, it sounds like we've got some work, and the chair of the K-12 Finance has indicated some ideas for the author in that regard. Representative Morgan, any closing comments at this point?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just urge support of this. Education Minnesota has urged us to allow intermediate school district teachers to participate in these plans. I'd like you to keep in mind that nobody has to participate in these plans. There is no mandate from the state to participate in these plans. School districts, school boards, and their bargaining units are going to decide whether or not to participate based in part upon the amount of funds available to support the plan that they develop. They want to develop good plans. This will allow them to participate as full partners, just like any other school district would, and develop the kind of plans that have worked very well in several school districts across the state. So I urge your support of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Morgan. With that, the chair renews his motion that House File 365 be recommended to pass and be referred to the House K-12 Finance Committee. All in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Morgan, Superintendent Hayes. Thank you. It's been a terrific education of intermediate districts for this committee this morning. Thank you. Next is House File 396, Representative Dominguez. Welcome to the committee, Representative Dominguez, if you can identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative Augustine Willie Dominguez, for the record.
Thank you. Representative Dominguez, the chair will move House File 396 be recommended to pass, and I believe your intention is to move this to the, that it be re-referred to the House K-12 Finance Committee?
You're correct, sir.
Very well. Then our chair's motion will be House File 396 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the House K-12 Finance Committee. Representative Dominguez, if you can begin your testimony and introduce your testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say this is the overwhelming. I would have been in public safety right now, but I wanted to be here because I think this is also very important.
You're in the better committee, Representative Dominguez.
And I believe it's the very first time that a Latino is talking to a Latino, so it's history.
Podemos hacer todo esto.
Vamos a hablar español.
Qué bueno. Pass. All right. Okay. Representative Dominguez.
And gracias. Mr. Chair, to break the ice a little bit there, this is a very good bill, I believe. It's increasing the amount of extended time revenue available to the school districts for programming authorizing under the state learning year program. What this does, it gives more time to the extended year for summer school, some of the time that students can get better education. As you know, most of us went to my district, District 58, to have a hearing, and you heard a lot of those folks over in that area talk about the education for their children and what is needed. And that's why we're bringing this bill forward, because it's very important, not only in my district, but the state of Minnesota. I might add also, too, that the governor's, this is in the governor's budget, just so you know that that's why, again, it's brought forward. I do have some folks here who are going to testify in behalf, and I'm going to yield to the time to them, so I want them to introduce themselves. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Wonderful. Thank you, Representative Dominguez. Sir, please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning. I'm Mike McCullough. My name is Mike McCullough. I'm the principal of Washington Technology Magnet Middle School.
Welcome.
Thank you. And welcome to you, Chair Mariani. This is the Washington attendance area. We're the closest middle school to the Capitol. We're about a mile north of Rice Street, as you know. Representative Mariani, as well as Representative Erdahl, has visited our school before and seen some of the work that we're doing. Wanted to just testify to the members on behalf of this bill. It's the right thing to do is kind of the bottom line. We believe in high standards, not only in St. Paul and at Washington, but I'm sure at the schools in your district. And we also know that some students take more time than other students. And to reach those high standards, some students are going to take more time than other students. It's the same whether I'm also a constituent of Representative Swales out in South Washington County. We know that the students out there that are struggling with the higher standards, as the standards are increasing, require more time, whether they're a certain subgroup or whether they're students that just don't have preparation. This bill will allow them to have more time after school in the extended day program and during the summer summer school program as well. Also, we know that extended day programs work. Washington Technology Magnet Middle School, we had 200 students in our extended day program yesterday, about a third of our school. We have 600 students, 91% of which receive free and reduced price lunch. We're about 90% students of color, and we're the only high-poverty middle school in the state of Minnesota that is making adequate yearly progress under the No Child Left Behind Act. Not that all of those things are combined or related, but I think that giving students more time in academics not only helps them with the academics, but allows them to continue to do those things during the regular school day so that they're not just coming to school and it being math and science and testing all day long. We all know how important physical activity is, you know, that 25% of our students have issues with obesity. We know how important the arts are. If we continue to just do math and reading during the day and not offer extended day programs for these students, what will happen is we're going to lose the arts, as we already are. I'm sure you're hearing testimony from other people about how we're losing the arts, we're losing Phi Ed. And talking to your own constituents, well, that's not a very you know, well-rounded education for the students. So by offering extended day programs, not just for students in St. Paul, but for students throughout Minnesota, we're giving those students the extra assistance they need to reach the high standards. Again, the programs that I've seen, the programs that we have at Washington are working. I was very excited by the fact that Governor Plenty included this in his education budget and his education plan. You know, so we're all talking about the same thing, that high standards are where we want our students to be, but that some students require more time, and that this was one venue to give those students more time. If we think about, if you've had your own students, where are middle school students between 3 and 5 in the afternoon anyway? I mean, most of our parents are either working, either in two-parent jobs, or they're single parents and they're working. If we can provide them a place, a safe place for their students to be after school, not only are we helping the students become more successful, but we're helping the families as well. So, again, I certainly encourage your support of this bill, and if there's any questions, I can answer them after the testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McCullough. And I know that members here and in Representative Riley's committee have talked quite a bit about the concern for a well-rounded education. You know, I think we're all struggling with, you know, the current framework. It sets pretty high expectations of time to be spent on some very important disciplines, but also worried about that perhaps other disciplines are being neglected, and understanding the connection between all disciplines in terms of reinforcing academic behavior. And we've also talked a little bit about, and obviously the governor is recognizing the importance of extra assistance that's offered through extended time, particularly for targeted student groups that are currently not achieving at the levels that we want to see them achieve. Representative Dominguez, you have another testifier as well?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. She can identify herself.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, I do have some handouts here if you'd be interested in seeing them. My name is Mary Berry, and I'm the Executive Director of Alternative Programs, Area Learning Centers, and Charter Schools for Minneapolis Public Schools. And I only want to add a few things to what my colleague said here about extended day programs, and that is, you know that in Minneapolis we have a lot of challenges, but with those challenges come the possibilities, and to raise the 1.2 to 1.5 gives me a lot of hope for the things that we could do for our students. One thing that I would be very excited to be able to do would be to do an accelerated program for our new immigrant students. We have a great many students who come to us when they're 17, 18 years old, don't speak the language, have never been in school, and having a 1.5 would allow us to really give them a concentrated level of schooling for the years that we have them with us. We also would like to extend our summer school program and our after school program. Right now we're kind of in competition with each other because of the cap, and to be able to go more in depth in our summer school programs and after school programs would be a really great thing for our students and all the students. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have as well.
Thank you. We do have a question from Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. Mr. McCullough may have answered this in part, but, sir, to what extent do you think you could close the achievement gap using these dollars, especially considering you're from a magnet school?
Mr. Mariani.
Mr. McCullough.
That's an easy question, right? What we do at Washington is what school districts all over Minnesota are doing, and that's an increase in use of data. And what we find is that the more we can align programs using data to individual student needs, that we can help students be successful. What we've shown in St. Paul, especially on the ELL side, as you know, is that we have closed the achievement gap between second language learners and students that are not ELL learners. How do we do that? We do it through professional development, and we do it through extended day programs. A majority of our second language learners are in extended day programs. It just makes sense. Even for those programs that are, you know, that are not high academic, high rigor focus, if a student, we have a lot of Hmong students at Washington, we're about 55% Asian, primarily Hmong, but if the students have they're going home and they're speaking Hmong, well, they're not learning English faster. If they're at Washington for another 2 hours a day and they're speaking English, then they're learning English faster. So again, it's we've shown that we can close the achievement gap with the ELL and the non-ELL students. I think the extended day program and using some of our data systems would allow us to close the gap even further in some of our other subgroups.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it Ms. Berry?
Uh-huh.
Is that right? I'm curious about, you mentioned about the immigrants who come, 16, 17, 18 years old, never been in school before, and you mentioned this could help with those. Can you give us a little more specific example? Are you thinking you can have more of them in after-school type programs or do more with the ones who are already coming? And if so, how would you do that?
Ms. Berry. Thank you. What we would do is we have two right now. We have two alternative schools that are also area learning centers that serve immigrant populations. But we're limited in the amount of after school. Right now we do an hour and a half a day of after school, and we do a four-week-long summer school program. If we had more hours to work with these students, I would increase summer school. I would bring it up to 6 or even 8 weeks. This is probably the most wonderful group of young people you'd ever want to work with. And if you ever want to feel good, come to one of their graduation ceremonies. And we'd also increase their after-school time. If we did a four-hour after-school program, I know they'd be there. We have community organizations in Minneapolis that do work with our immigrant population for 4 and 5 hours a day after school. Unfortunately, we can only fund them for a small portion of that, but we'd be able to increase that, which would allow them to bring licensed teachers in for that period of time and to work with the students. And we'd also use their individual learning plans, because everybody has an individual learning plan in our after-school programs, to target those areas that they need help in. And not just have it be a remediation type of program, but have it actually be an acceleration to bring them up to where they need to be so that they can graduate.
Representative Heiger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. More of a comment that this will come back, Representative Mingus, again in education finance. My sister does this extended day program in Representative Downs District. But anyways, I'm quite familiar with it, and we've seen from Representative Demmer's district that we had Rochester down, and they testified, and the results they had were great. I would like to see, if we could, I'd like to see a spreadsheet across the state of Minnesota to see where and who are exactly using these funds, and see if the school districts that some of them may need it, I would like to see if they're really accessing the extended time period. But again, it's more of a comment. If we could see some spreadsheets, I know that within my district, Melrose, for example, has within the last 5 years, they picked up just in the bottom three grades close to 200 students ELL. So I mean, it would be interesting to see if they're aware of what's all happening and these programs are available.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps if the department is listening, perhaps that's something that the department can help us out. And hopefully, as we move forward in hearing the governor's proposals, that'll be information that can be forthcoming. We do have two other testifiers, so perhaps I've got one other person who has a question for now. Perhaps I can ask these other two who have put themselves on the list to come forward, and then we'll take it from there. We have Brad Lundell and Grace Schwab. Perhaps both of you can come up together. So. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourselves and offer your thoughts and testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Grace Schwab with the Minnesota School Boards Association, and I would like to commend Representative Dominguez for his leadership in this area. My delegate assembly, which is grassroots school board members from around the state, got together in December and decided really what their legislative platform and priorities would be, where we really need the help. And this was one of our key targeted areas to do this. This bill automatically increases the weights back up and ties it to the general ed formula. Now, I think that's the difference with the governor's budget. He doesn't do the direct tie to the general education formula, and Representative Dominguez's bill does that. This is something that not only will help Minneapolis and St. Paul, who are sort of handy to have here, but across the state of Minnesota, and usually it tends to be places that have ALCs. And when you look at the MCLD requirements for 2013 and 14, where we have to have 100% student proficiency, this is probably one of the sole programs out there that can really help kids get there. Or if they fail, how do they get back? So once again, MSBA and school boards around the state of Minnesota support this bill and this proposal and feel this is integral in getting all children to achieve. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Schwab.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I first want to inform everyone that my phone is turned off. So
good man.
My name is Brad Lundell. I'm the Executive Director of Schools for Equity in Education, and I want to really commend Representative Dominguez for offering this bill and putting it forward. As has been stated, this was part of the adjustments made in 2003 when the legislature and the governor were trying to deal with this $4.5 billion deficit. But I think if you look of all the decisions that were made, and they all were painful when it came to education, amongst those decisions, this is probably, I think, one of the most painful and in some cases the most tragic of those decisions. And I really think that it's, as Ms. Schwab said, there's a statewide impact here that is going to be welcomed, and certainly both in terms of bringing up achievement and a closing achievement gap. But I think the other thing, and Grace, again, talked a little bit about this, and I know that Representatives Ward and Erickson have worked in area learning centers and with alternative education. There are many students that are using these programs or using the learning year to resurrect their high school career, not just to close a learning gap, but in many cases people who have dropped out for a year are now wanting to graduate on time or to accelerate their ability to get those credits. And I think that this is the kind of system, or this kind of change, will get us back to where people could do 3 years in two calendar years. So I think it's very, very important, and I think it's, again, commend Representative Dominguez for putting this bill forward.
Thank you. I would also, and
Scott Kronquist from AMSD could not be here today. I know that AMSD also supports this bill. I'm trying to think of some other things that can have AMSD support while I'm here, but I guess we'll kind of let that. I'm drawing a blank right now. So.
Thank you, Mr. Lundell. Are there any questions for these two individuals, Representative Gutwald?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not in particular for these two individuals. I am curious, just as a matter of process. I know this bill, I believe, went straight through to the Finance Committee in the Senate. And here it's coming to our policy body first before it goes to finance. Is there a reason why it didn't there and it is here? Maybe that's a question for the chair.
Representative Gutwald, it's similar to the question Representative Erickson raised in the last bill. And the quick answer is because we're the better committee. The true answer is that the powers that be thought it should come here. And so I think it's important for us to vet through the policy issues of these bills. And sometimes, quite frankly, you'll see a bill that has, on the surface, pretty much just a finance implication. But policy is supported by finance and vice versa. And so it does give us an opportunity to vet those things through. Hopefully that also means that if the bill does go forward to the finance division, that it makes that discussion a little bit more efficient there, where they can focus much more on the numbers questions with some confidence that a good chunk of the policy issues have been raised. That's as best the answer as I can give you. And as the chair of the committee, I certainly do intend to vet through the policy issues on these bills as they come forward. Representative Peterson, I believe, has a question perhaps for the other testifiers. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My questions have been answered, and I've had many of the same requests from the ALCs in my district, so I'm delighted the bill is here.
Representative Abel.
Just as a policy money question, money determines the policy, and so if we do this, it's going to cost a bit of money, and there'll be something else we can't do, so that's the decision that it really is a policy question.
Are there any individuals in the audience that wish to testify for or against the bill? Okay. Representative Dominguez, any other thoughts or comments?
Just one comment, Mr. Chair, that Education Minnesota also supports this bill, and I do believe this is a great bill that should go forward. If there's any questions that the representatives want to ask me personally, I'd be happy to answer those questions. Also, for Representative Heikergen's question, there is a small graph on the back of this one that tells a little story, but we'll get you some more graph, and we'll go from there. Thank you very much for that comment, though. I like looking at graphs myself.
And it's actually a pretty good request. I think it is important for us to get a sense of what's happening because the landscape is changing, as you indicated in your school district, pretty rapidly across the state in this and a number of other areas. Members, there being no other discussion, the chair renews his motion that House File 396 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the K-12 Finance Committee. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Dominguez.
Gracias.
De nada. La próxima la haremos en español, ¿no? Buenos días. Members, our next bill number, I'll get in a second, House File 169, Representative Slawick. Representative Slawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You'll need to identify yourself even though you are a member of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nora Slawick, State Representative, 55B, Oakdale and Maplewood. Mr. Chair, first of all, I'll have to say we might have to have a challenge from our committee to your committee on who is the best committee. But we will handle that another day.
We could take a vote right now on it, huh? We can bowl, is that it? I like that.
Well, we might pick up on that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 169.
Representative Slawick moves House File 169. Representative Slawick, is there a another part of that motion in terms of referring it anywhere? Or?
Well, Mr. Chair, we're hoping to have it re-referred to the Early Childhood Learning Finance Division.
All right. Very well. Representative Slawick, please proceed.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I do have an amendment, H01-69A2, which I would like to move so we can get the bill in the shape we want it before the committee.
Representative Slawick moves House or Amendment H01-69A2, and this is to put the bill in the shape that the author wishes to have it. For new members, this is typically a pretty routine motion. We typically do honor an author's wishes to have the bill shaped up the way he or she prefers to have it. However, it certainly is a debatable motion and one that we will vote on. So, members, are there any question on the amendment? Do you care to explain it very quickly?
Yes, Mr. Chair, this is a bill I've introduced over several years, and in looking at it this year, we did just some technical amendments, add one more member to the advisory board, up to 12, try to depoliticize it instead of have the governor appoint some of the members, having it be the majority leader and Senate majority leader, so just getting it in better shape.
So, members, the motion is before you to get to move this amendment to put this bill in the shape the author wishes to have it. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. The bill as amended is before us.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. What I'd like to do is walk through the bill briefly, then I have two testifiers here that are going to talk about it. As I said, I have had this bill before this body for several years. There is a movement nationally, which the testifiers are going to talk about, to have some kind of school readiness board or governance for states so that they can make the decisions on the important issue of school readiness. How this one is set up, how I would propose it, it's a coordinated, efficient, and cost-effective system for school readiness. Section 1 would be establishment of the board. It'd be a 12-member advisory board per the amendment. Subdivision 2 talks about the board members and the terms. You can see the different commissioners that are on there. We also added the Commissioner of Human Services. Also, in it deletes Section 4, and in Section 5, it has the public members appointed by jointly the speaker and the minority leader. So you can see who's on there and the kinds of terms they serve. The duties, I think this is the really important part of the bill. What we hope to do with this bill, members, is put this into the early childhood omnibus bill, at least get it debated there and get it on the table for talking about what kind of governance we might want to have. The duties in this bill, it would be looking at what's the most effective method to improve the coordination and delivery of early care and education services. That's a big issue in our state. It would talk about a multi-year plan for effectively and efficiently coordinating, integrating state services for early care and education, and methods for measuring the quality and quantity and effectiveness. Also, you can see on the next points how to identify and measure school readiness, how to track policy changes, providing technical assistance, and then talks about forming some work groups on issues like financing early childhood programs, building a coordinated service delivery system, integrating a coordinated collaborative health care component, enhancing quality and measuring the cost of child care, and improving the wages, benefits, and supply of early childhood professionals. So with that, members, I would like to ask the testifiers to briefly talk. I have asked them and wanted to make it clear this is my bill. I have had this for several years, and so I appreciate them coming to share their views on this bill today. I'd like to start with Ms. Nicolai.
Welcome, Ms. Nicolai, to the committee. Please identify yourself on the record and offer us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Zoe Nicolai. I'm the Public Policy Director at Ready for K, and I'm here to testify today on House File 169 that establishes this board on school readiness. This issue of governance is one that Ready for K is very interested in, and one we've been doing a lot of thinking about over the years. We think it's an essential step in helping guide Minnesota in the development of a effective, coordinated school readiness or early learning system that really does help move that needle of the number of kids coming to school fully prepared to learn. I want to just give a little bit of background of the work that Ready for K has been doing. In 2002, Minnesota was one of four states that was selected to be a part of a national initiative called the BUILD Initiative, which has now grown to nine states. It includes Illinois, Ohio, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Hawaii, Michigan, Oklahoma, and Washington, and it's funded through a group called the National Early Childhood Funders Collaborative, a group of national foundations. McKnight is one of the members, the Kellogg Foundation, etc. And the goal of the funders was to really take a look at how they could play a role in moving forward nationally the improvement of early care and education for families. And so they provide support to states to bring together key stakeholders who would begin to think about planning and implementing comprehensive early learning systems. And the focus of BUILD has been on the first 5 years of life and has a broad conception around systems building that includes early care and education, health, family support, and early intervention, and how do you build a systems of systems that works. So in Minnesota, Ready for K was has been the BUILD grantee. We've been working with a very broad group of stakeholders over these past 4 years to look at what might a well-coordinated system be in Minnesota. We developed something that over the last couple of sessions we've been talking about here at the legislature, the what we call Minnesota's Roadmap to School Readiness, a five-year plan that really laid out a whole series of strategies for bringing Minnesota to a good system for families, and you've seen it. We made a presentation here just a couple of weeks ago. This policy agenda, a lot of the strategies on that came from that roadmap that was developed. One of the pieces of that roadmap that we spent time talking about was governance, and we had a work group that examined what it might look like in Minnesota. We did some research about what other states have been doing. We participated in a couple of national symposiums that the BUILD Initiative sponsored around this whole issue of governance. Some things that we've learned that I just want to share with you. This issue of governance, how a state assesses the needs of children and families, then manages their early childhood programs for good, positive child outcomes, and coordinates it with local community efforts. It's a very complex but essential issue. In Minnesota right now, we don't have a formal governance structure, either statewide or local, that defines what's the role of the states and what's the role of communities in building or managing an early childhood system. On a statewide level, I would say that right now what we have is different state agencies. Probably the key ones are the Department of Human Services, the Department of Education, and the Department of Health. They have responsibility for different parts of the system, and coordination is not always as good as we may want it to be. And then at the local level, and primarily through the efforts of foundation leadership and funding, many Minnesota communities, without any state oversight or involvement, have established local planning and governance coalitions to focus attention on and implement
elements of effective early care and education. And this has happened through, many of you are probably familiar with the Minnesota Initiative Foundations. There's six of them in greater Minnesota. They have been funded over the past 5 years with a grant from the McKnight Foundation, but also with funds from their own local communities to establish early childhood coalitions. And to date, they now have over 64 coalitions that represents 150 communities in greater Minnesota. Those communities have been gathering information, raising awareness about the issue, creating what's a vision for their own community, and begun to implement strategies. But there's no good mechanism right now for a systemic linkage between what's happening in the community level, local early childhood work that could help inform the state in their systems planning, and vice versa. A lot of the good work that the departments are doing often doesn't, there's not a good mechanism for communication. Last summer, Ready for K convened a two-day planning retreat with a grant, again, from the Build Initiative, to explore how to better bring together state and community early childhood work. We called it Building Connections, and we had over 90 people, many people from the Minnesota Initiative Foundations, good representation from those three state agencies, some legislators, advocacy groups, parents, providers, school districts, and others. And at the end of the retreat, the participants did reach a consensus on what they thought would be a good governance model for Minnesota that would utilize the strengths of both the local community and state agencies. And it was a two-part model. First, a statewide governance, which is what we kind of had before us in this bill. Although the recommendations from the participants at the retreat that was that it would be mostly private or quasi-governmental governing entity that would oversee and assure a coordinated effective system. And then the second part of that is that we would continue to see these local community early childhood coalitions. The model would have this statewide governing entity and community coalitions that would both have agreed upon goals, outcomes, desired outcomes for school readiness, and then some guiding principles that would certainly include, first and foremost, parent choice, cost effectiveness of early childhood strategies, cultural competence, and sustainability. Our next steps from this retreat were going to be that we would convene a smaller working group from that group of participants, begin to think about this governance, and now this bill kind of puts us on a little bit more of a fast track of, well, now, you know, what do we want to see for Minnesota? We want to offer our support and hope to give this bill a broad review of the people that were at that Building Connections retreat, get their input on it, and believe that our role as the bill grantee in Minnesota, that we think we can be helpful in, if this bill does become law, that we have some, all the work that's gone into the systems planning we've been doing, that we have a chance to share that. I want to say that over 36 states have been doing this and have some kind of planning and governance structures. This is an excellent book that can help guide legislators. It's called Building an Early Learning System, the ABCs of Planning and Governance Structures. It shows just a complete array of different models that these 36 states have been setting up as they do this important work of beginning to really take hold of early childhood and make it a priority. And then the last thing I'll mention, and I'll end with it, is that another one of our early childhood leaders nationally, Dr. Sharon Lynn Kagan from Columbia University, has written this Back to Basics, Essential Components of an American Early Care and Education System. And her last piece on of what should be in a system is on governance, and we were kind of pleased to see that it matches what our Building Connections retreat came up with, two-part, that you establish governance mechanisms at the state level. They must be durable, take responsibility for planning, assessment, distribution of resources, and agenda setting, and then a governance mechanism at the local level. And at the local level, that helps coordinate the delivery of services, the effective use of funds, provisions for the infrastructure and coordinating efforts. So with that, I'll end, and thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Ms. Nicolai. Representative Slawick, we have six questions already from members, and I know you have another testifier. We also have two individuals that wish to comment on the bill.
Mr. Chair, could we have our other testifier go and then take questions? Would that be okay?
Certainly.
Okay, and members, just so you know, this came out of, I've been working with Ready for K for probably 10 years and on this process and been to the National Build Conference. I was at the conference that talked about this governor's structure, and I was at the governor's summit that talked about this. Over and over we keep hearing we need to coordinate, we need to get a state system going. So that's where this comes from, and it's kind of the first stab, although I've introduced this bill for several years. It's wonderful to be able to talk about this today. Dr. Reynolds?
Dr. Reynolds, thank you for coming. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record. We are kind of pushing time a little bit here. We have 15 minutes left, and we have a number of questions and
sure.
Other individuals as well. So please keep that in mind as you offer your thoughts here today. Thank you for coming.
I'm Arthur Reynolds, a professor of child development at the University of Minnesota. And thank you for having me here today. And I just want to, you know, kind of walk through what I see as the three major strengths of this bill developing a more coordinated plan for early childhood education in the state of Minnesota. One, I think I really can't emphasize enough that the importance of organizing a more unified early childhood system in Minnesota is important. I mean, currently we have a very fragmented system, you know, both for financing and for funding across the programs, and you go through the list of the programs, the funds from the state for Head Start, early childhood family education, school readiness, first grade preparedness. All the programs are financed a little bit differently. They have different goals. They have different statutory requirements. They have different length of days. They have different durations and requirements for professional staff, and they're not aligned at all. So having a governance structure like the advisory board will make sure or increase opportunities for, you know, kind of building in a more unified system, more coherent early childhood system that will have a more positive effect on kids. I think, you know, in addition to helping to organize and create a more unified early childhood system, I think the bill also can help establish consensus about the best and most effective ways to both finance and to implement early childhood programs well. And if you look, actually, the leading states in early childhood education today, such as Illinois, Georgia, Oklahoma, Michigan, all those states developed a planning or a task force or a governance structure very early in the development of their relatively unified systems of early education. And I think obviously, in both the financing and in the implementation, there's a lot of different approaches that have been floated around the state in terms of financing through, you know, scholarships, through allowances, through more investment by government to organize the system. It's a very complicated system, and to do it kind of on the seat of the pants without a full accounting of the complexity and the importance of aligning all the features of the system that currently exists before sort of new investments are brought in, that would be important. So establishing consensus becomes very important. I think the last thing, in some ways, may be the most important, in that an organized structure, governance structure, will help ensure that programs that and experiences that kids get will be high in quality. Because what other states have learned is that the key elements that are necessary to promote positive effect for kids are very difficult to achieve in a fragmented system as currently exists. So I think having a board like this can help more establish that the programs, experiences that kids have in early childhood settings that are funded by the state will be more likely to have a positive impact on school readiness. And again, I go back to, you know, the Governor's Summit, because the purpose of the Governor's Summit was to actually identify how to improve quality in the system. And I think the 10 key features of quality that have to be in place in early childhood programs, you know, to make those programs effective for kids. And there's a you know, a list of 10, such as, you know, targeting children at risk, providing sufficient length and duration of early childhood experiences. All those things have to be in place, and it's very difficult to have an effective early childhood system, you know, without taking into account quality. So I think having a advisory board, having more of a governance structure, can both plan a financing and implementation system that will ensure that kids have access to high quality, comprehensive early childhood services. And I'll stop at that point.
Thank you, Mr. Reynolds. I appreciate it. What I'm going to do is, Representative Slawick is call on a couple of members who have questions. I do want to honor the fact that two other individuals have asked to testify. And so if you can keep your questions quick and short and your answers equally quick and short, I would greatly appreciate it. Representative Demmer, followed by Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Slawick, I got a quick question about this. This is a bit more technical nature. In your amendment, you took out the governor and put majority and minority leader in the House and Senate, and then you commented on the speaker doing it. And could you clarify for me exactly what you mean here,
Representative Slawick?
And also, if you would, also, why are you replacing the governor with these? So both exactly what are you trying to do, and then why?
Okay, thank you, Representative Demmer. Good question. This came up last night at 5 o'clock, and so I'll be honest, you know, and didn't have the language I exactly said. I did catch that myself, too. The intent here was, in talking with Ready for K and for other groups, they felt that having the governor appoint the folks could potentially politicize the committee. In other words, depending on who the governor is and how they feel about early childhood education, it could influence that one way or another. And we had him appointing, him or her would be appointing five public members. So the intent was to change it more into a typical structure, which is usually the speaker and the majority leader doing that. But we also wanted to make sure what we're trying to do is get bipartisan support here. So also have the minority leader and in the Senate, it's called the Senator Senjum would be have the role. So have the key leaders be able to appoint this person. So I apologize for the language not being exactly correct. We can clean that up. The intent, though, is that, and as you know, as a co-chair of the Early Childhood Caucus, I've tried to work very hard on a bipartisan basis, is to have those leaders approved and appointed on a bipartisan basis instead of strictly a gubernatorial basis, which potentially could be a political basis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my understanding, Representative Slaug, you were thinking speaker and minority leader in the House and probably the majority leader and the minority leader in the Senate.
Correct.
You know, we'd clean that up in the next committee, too.
Thank you.
Good. Representative Abel.
Thank you. And what hooked me on this idea was the coordination piece, which I've been talking about since I got here. Serving on both education and human service committees, we spend a ton of money, and actually at some of the same people. And many think just for one more home visit, we could really solve their problems. And some of these people, the home visits are actually annoying because they get so many. And so I hope that as you look at this project, maybe there's some language we can clarify. Just that you want to be sure you look at the county-based services that they're getting, which could affect their ability to learn. And I mean, to get too far, you got mobility and other things. But at least so with DHS there, I'm glad you added that. That's a really key piece. And they're known by both the districts and the counties, these same families are trying to reach out to. So
thank
at least
some
of the case. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Excellent feedback.
Thank you, Representative Abler. I'm going to do this. I'm going to ask the two people who have signed up to testify to come forward, Ms. Karen Efren and Ms. Carol White. Testifiers, please hang around because we do have some other questions. We are running short on time, members. So welcome, Ms. Efren and Ms. White. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. I'm going to ask you to keep it pretty short and quick and powerful. So,
my name
thank
is
you.
Carol White, and I'm representing Parents Speak Out and the African Americans Concerned Together. And with that, I want to apologize to Representative Slawick. I didn't get a chance to talk with her on yesterday. I did leave a message and was hoping that I could interact with her before I came before. But I feel this is really a serious issue. First, I wanted to say that I support the bill with some concerns. And my concern is
particularly in the line item 229 on page 2, behavior, health, and early education. I have been working with parents, and I don't have parents this morning because it was so early and they needed to get the children off. But my concern is this whole screen from birth to 5 years old. For children of color and poor children, this becomes very serious. As far as mislabeling, being highly represented in special ed, highly involved in identified as having some severe mental issues that can move toward psychotropic drugs, and the parents not being able to understand or to know, and some of the bills, even national or state, say conform consent, and as I've listened, you know, we have a lot of immigrants, but also we have a lot of citizens who don't clearly understand the language that is put forth in the kind of information given to them, and that there's no one to help translate even the English jargon or the language that is there. So I'm urging every committee that is having a part of dealing with screening for all, but particularly for early education, because that is screening, universal screening from zero to death. And that is a 2003 initiative, federal, as well as it comes under the New Freedom Act. So I'm wanting to discuss that, and I'm wanting people to understand that. As well as I looked at the bill, we need to have non-traditional people on the advisory committee. We need people that are not locked into just the mental health area and the education. I'm a teacher and a social worker. I feel we need people who are non-traditional. Parents. We need people who not in the mainstream, but have parents as the first teacher and the first psychologist, a psychiatrist. And we must not leave them out. And I think that I would strongly suggest that be included, not just left to someone that is professional in that field, but someone who has the concern because that's their children or their grandchild or their nephew or even as myself, a godparent. So I'm hoping that we have more time to discuss, so when the amendment comes, that that will be addressed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. White. You and I did have an opportunity to talk, not about this bill, but in general around these issues most recently, and I must say that I also share some concerns that you have shared with me. I'm less troubled in terms of this bill because of the nature of making recommendations as opposed to making policy. But nonetheless, I think you raised some very important issues, and I'm wondering, Representative Slawik, assuming that we move this bill on to your division, what your intent would be in terms of being able to consider and possibly incorporate some suggestions that Ms. White has put forward here today.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate the comments today. And I think, you know, once you bring a bill forward, you see what the holes are. And I guess parents were an obvious oversight on my part. I know that we also, one of the members, Representative Gottwald, we just talked about the same thing. So I am very open to suggestions. I would like to get the bill to my committee so we can start to restructure it. I know Representative Gottwald's on the committee and can make sure that we make those changes. But I am open to changes because this is, as I said, been a bill that's been for several years and would like to work to get it to the shape that we need it to be.
Terrific. Ms. Ephraim, we have 3 minutes left. I apologize for the shortness of our time, but if you can offer your comments very quickly, I do want to proceed with our motion and take a vote on the bill before we adjourn.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity. My name is Dr. Karen Ephraim. I'm here on behalf of EdWatch. We appreciate this bill's approach toward early childhood public policy in that it has a publicly accountable mechanism for dealing with these issues, and we appreciate Representative Slawik's work on that. as opposed to MELF, which did not want public accountability and open meetings. That said, however, we also have concerns about the language on 229 in the area of behavioral health, because it is putting into law the implementation of a federal program called the State Early Childhood Comprehensive System, the core elements of which are all the elements listed on page 220 or lines 228 and 229. Here's a handout from the national organization implementing that. Here also is a handout regarding the plans for universal infant mental health screening, and the caveats that even the another academic organization that is implementing this federal program have listed. And this has been stated in state documents to say, quote, NECCS is a federally funded grant program to coordinate and integrate early childhood screening systems to assure that all children birth to age 5 are screened early and continuously for the presence of health, socio-emotional, meaning mental health and developmental needs. Our concerns about this, aside from the fact of the universal nature, which is not necessary, is the lack of science behind the screening and diagnostic criteria, the lack of evidence of effectiveness, over-identification of poor and minorities for emotional disorders and mental retardation in special education, overuse of psychiatric medication in young children, not dealing with some of the issues in autism, which is an 800-pound gorilla, taking on more federal mandates, and, again, the role of government authority and versus parent rights. And yes, this is just a committee, this is just recommendations, but it is taking on and implementing into state law things that are on very shaky medical, scientific, and academic grounds.
Thank you, Ms. Efram. I appreciate your conciseness in presenting the information. Members, we are actually a little bit over time. I do want to proceed. I know there are a number of members that have questions. I want to apologize to them. This bill, assuming it passes, will be vetted in another committee as well, and it sounds like the chair, or rather the author of the bill, is certainly very open and amenable to engaging others and continuing to shape a good policy in regards to this bill. With that said, the chair renews his motion that House File 169 be, as amended, be recommended to pass and we refer to the Early Childhood Education Finance Committee. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails. Members, thank you. Thank you to testifiers. Next Thursday we will be hearing a number of bills on early childhood, and so we may revisit some of these issues at that time. With that said, this committee is adjourned.